All right, welcome back to the Kevin Sheehan Show. Dan Quinn live at the podium out in Ashburn right now. We take you live to Dan Quinn.
All right, what's up, everybody? All right, our final kind of wrap up training camp, roster decisions, all of that. To kind of discuss that. After today's practice, the players will also get a 3-day break over the weekend. And they need it too. Our times together with them are really intense, so their time to recharge and go. But practice today is really squarely on us, and things that we need to hit on, things we need to work, timing, execution, our skill work, end of the game situation. So we're going to go right back into it, into that spot. And finally, and most importantly, Mike Sanderstill and John Jones are excused today for two very good and special reasons.
Okay.
It's pretty weird, yeah.
It worked out last year. With Terry and Jane, like, how much are they able that they're doing to just maybe get that connection back? What are some of the little things they're doing to regain that?
Yeah, I think more of it just, you know, time on task, John, honestly, to say, do they have experience together? Yes. Banked reps? Yes. But still, like yesterday, we ran a deep play action, you know, that was over to Terry. That was like a good route that you'd seen before. So now let's say, let's work this one some more, this one a little bit more. So Jaden's excellent with that, to work a specific route with a specific player on some things. And so that's what you'll see more with him and Terry, extras, earlies, this specific route, this timing, because it's not all the same for every player. And so that's kind of the challenge of it, you know, from a quarterback and a receiver, not the, you know, the playing zone where you're, you know, back facing the quarterback, but, you know, deep overs, comebacks, the timing of it. So that's what they'll continue to work through.
Obviously, they're both very good players, right? But together, they, you know, the connection, the Reds and all that, is there something else about how they are, how they operate, besides just being good, that allows them to have a certain connection?
Yeah, I would say the complementary reason that comes to mind first, I would think, John, is one's an exceptional deep ball ability to go track it, and the other's exceptionally throwing it. So I think maybe there's I've never really thought of it in that way, but there's probably some complementary football that goes to one another. So here's a guy that can really go and get on top of people and catch it over different shoulders on a deep ball, and a quarterback who's got the touch to do it. So I think that's probably the biggest complementary piece, you know, of their games, that they're able to, you know, support one another on the things, two of the things that they both do really well.
To the guys who made this squad, they take a deep breath, exhale. What about you guys who sat there and went over every different name and every player and went back and forth?
Yeah.
When you finally make that 53, how did you guys react?
Yeah, it's a hard thing. It's not as hard as the players going through it, that's for sure. They have the toughest spot. But there were a lot of ones that kept us up at night. Let's think through it again. Get a late text from Adam, this and this. So, you know, like a either or, a scenario. And so I like going through those exercises with him, Chick, because it also gets me to think and think of it in different ways. And so I had, from my own knowledge, I wanted the coaches, they're going to rank everybody at this spot and what their roles would be week one. What about week five? You know, so we could think about what it looks like today and then what it looks like a month or two from now. So as coaches, you do have to think that way. And then also, I know we talk about practice squad and not, but I think of it like 70 men, knowing that here you're counted on to be responsible to be ready. And so if that's an elevation this week or a following week, it's going to happen. So I want them to just prepare and play in that way. So it's not like they don't get reps at practice. They do. And I want to make sure that, like, these are the standards and how we have to go about them.
And with the departure of B-Rob, a guy like C-Rod, Chris Rodriguez, he's been here now 3 years. His evolution is what to you?
Consistent, for one. I would say, like, when somebody can demonstrate over and over again that they're willing to put the work in, find the right read, just not just the physical skill, but mentally, on the special teams. Like, he's a player chick that this team really trusts. If you ask Larry, like yesterday, he was giving the look on punt to another player who's playing the wing. That's the same spot Chris often plays. So that move that he hit, he knows what stresses him. And so I thought, what a great example of, like, Jeremy and him providing the look of things that can be troublesome to some of the other players. And if you can get your team to a spot like that where they're testing one another and pushing one another, that's a really big deal. And I think Chris is a great example of that. I saw it in the preseason games, whether he was just excited when Bill had a big run against Cincinnati, as he was for himself. And so that doesn't happen all the time. And but I like his fight. I like that he really worked hard to change his body. And, you know, those are things that when people continue to show you that, then, like, you pay attention.
To follow up on that, did you intend to keep four backs? Once you guys traded Brian Robinson, did you know you would keep four backs? And how much did Chris's play in, you know, preseason camp, and I guess even late last season, kind of play into his getting a spot this year?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it was definitely, like, usually it's at the skill spot. How many tight ends, how many running backs? The evolution also of the return game, Nikki, that's influenced me too, because those are more plays and examples to go see if we can, you know, further even that starting field position. You know, right now at the touchback on the 35, we're anticipating a lot of people putting it into play, but we don't know that yet. And so I think that part of the game does, it feels running back-ish. Not to say that Debo is a receiver, but he runs hard like a back in a lot of ways, so he's certainly another one that we'll have. But I think that is a big part of it. We think of like an A-back and a B-back, Austin out of the backfield, third down. So it's not one size fits all, but I do like the versatility of the room.
Cliff said a week or so ago that he can't really tell what the offense is until you got some of the pieces back.
Right.
Now that you have those two receivers back, I know you don't have Sam Cosmi back yet. Are you able to see what the offense is yet? I mean, given the limited time frame before the opener?
Maybe not fully, but I do know that, like, we've still run the same. So it's not like the system changes. So putting them into some of those plays may look differently because of who the ball player is, you know, at that spot. But it's not like a new system comes in. So I think that's important to know for 10 others on that specific play. They'll be doing the same exact job. So let's face it, with, well, that, I think it grows, you know, like, I'm hopeful that the team we are and one is going to be really strong, and stronger in four and stronger in eight as we're building it. And if we hit all the marks, then we should do that. Our skills should get sharper. But I like the competitiveness at the receiver spot. And it's not just, you know, Terry and Debo and Noah, but, like, Jalen is that way. Luke is that way. Like, these are guys that like to battle for it. Our league is made up of a lot of contested catches. And it's one of the things Terry's exceptional at. Debo's in that same space. Noah is there. Certainly Luke and Jalen, they make up like a fierce competitive group. And so that's important. And knowing that, like, in tight coverage, these guys are going to go fight for the ball.
Sir?
Hey, Dave.
I know that the offensive line is a unit, and John's part of that too. And so there's a lot of moving parts. But do you have a working theory as to which side you'd like to run to on third and two, fourth and one?
You're like, I like that you included John. I think Don Warren would be awful proud of you to put the tight end as part of the O-line. He is an exceptional blocker. I don't know that yet, no. But I do like the athleticism of the group. And so we have tested gap-pulling schemes to the left, to the right, putting different guys in different spots. Coleman's been back in there. He's another guy that can get to the move. We've improved also in the screen games because we're ready to go to one side. But as far as, like, hey, on fourth down, got to have it going to this side, we're not there yet to say this is where the ball is going to go.
You're not there yet with...
Yeah, or I'm not there to share that with you yet. I might be closer to that than I'm letting on, but I am... I'm closer. Closer than you.
Next week, with the schedule, how much Packers do you put in next week along with the Giants, given that you got a short schedule the following week?
The coaches really had to be the ones to put it in over the weekend, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. So while Adam and I were busy with that, they really dug in on Green Bay. And so that way, when they could then, as the week went on, then it kind of shifted. But having a Thursday game is challenging. Having a Thursday game at week two is better than week seven, because having, I don't know if the term would be exactly right, like a preseason bye, you know how we've changed the schedule. So this window allows flexibility. I'm sure some teams are just doing, hey, 2 weeks on the opponent they're playing in the opener. But with that Thursday, there is some windows that the coaches aren't with the players, and they had Sunday off. I met with them by myself Monday. The players then had off Tuesday to begin practice Wednesday. So there was some pockets that they were able to do that. And then you have to shut the folders and put that in the drawer, and it doesn't come back out again until that Monday. But it did help.
It did. Fourth down success last year was such a big part of the team's story. Like history and like just probability would say it's very difficult to duplicate 87% success rate in fourth down.
Agreed.
How do you approach that? The idea that you're, you know, chasing that, but it's also, you know, probably not something you can like count on.
Yeah.
Achieving again.
It's not all one, you know, going into the game, sometimes it's, I want to make sure we're stealing another possession. So there's some strategy going on with that. It's about like nine drives or so a game as you're going through it. And so how do we gain an advantage on somebody? Sometimes going for it on fourth does that. Where's the kicker, you know, comfort level to go into that space? And then it's really by the distance. You look at the opponent, you know, where do they fall on the end ones? How about in twos? You know, where do they play on the threes and fours? If it's a certain style, maybe you're more apt to know what you're going to expect. But, yeah, Jaden was a big factor, you know, in that 87% or whatever the number was. There was a handful for sure that was called one thing, and then something happened and like he made the rest go down. Like we don't have a play called that. You don't want to count on that. That's a reactive way of the ball player doing his thing, but you don't want to lean into that. I think that's irresponsible. You want to make sure, hey, this is what we think we're going to do, how we're going to go down. But really by game is we make those decisions as much as we can before the game. So going in, the coordinators know what to expect, how we're going to do it. And then as the game unfolds, I'll communicate with them, you know, where we're at. But I think the secret for me on the telling the coordinators is early in the drive. So no one's ever caught off guard. Hey, we're going to go for it here, you know, like because it can impact some of your third down calls if it's into fourth down, knowing that you may have two downs.
Follow up on what John's asking for about, you know, quarterback receiver connection. You've defended a lot of those. You know, you had Matt and Julio in Atlanta. For you, like, what are kind of like the, you know, earmarks of what makes a great quarterback receiver tandem, aside from just, you know, great skill on by both players?
From my defensive perspective, you know this route's going to happen, and they still complete it. Like, that's the hardest. Like, damn, we talked about this throw or this route, and they're so exceptional at that, that they were able to, you know, put it in the right location at the right spot. But it is a real thing. The connection, chemistry, all of that matters. The best of the best players, they spend a lot of time together. That's even outside of coaching and that, to make sure those moments are delivered upon. But we're fortunate that Jaden and Terry are two that do that extra.
Hey, Dan, you mentioned...
Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be back. You mentioned Jalen Lane. I guess I'll start with a specific question. You knew what you were getting in him kind of when you drafted him. What has surprised you about him over the past couple weeks?
We knew the punt return ability was really strong. What I probably didn't know, and I knew he was fast and explosive, but the way that he's taken to coaching from Bobby, you can almost see the drill work come into the play. And so, like, there's a specific way you run an option route when somebody's on you. You don't want to hustle too quickly because then the defender's not really into the stress. So seeing him fully express how to work somebody into a technique, that's a really big deal, because in college, especially on offenses that play really fast, there's not as much man-to-man. And so that's one of the things that can be more challenging for a slot or a wide receiver that's playing in a tempo offense, like, because college plays faster than we play. So you see less matching and tight coverage. So they're able to run their routes at full speed and hit it and go to the next play. And so running an option route, defeating leverage, beating people in man-to-man, that's been an impressive, I'm not going to call it catch-up, but like development from the time he's arrived to where he is today.
And then a philosophical question. I know he played for his dad in high school, and you probably get a lot of guys who are sons of coaches. Is that like an overblown thing, or is there something different about guys who grew up around the sport in that way?
That's a better question for Jalen. I would say it's got to factor in somehow when you're 5 years old and you're at football practice when other people aren't. You saw things that happen, and I'm sure, like, you know, it matters. You know, Cliff's father was a defensive coordinator. So, you know, that different sides of the ball, and coached him as the – so he said, yeah, try throwing an interception in high school when your dad's the D coordinator. You know, not so easy. So with Jalen, like being around football his whole life, is that a factor on why some of those things are coming easier? Possibly. But at the end of it, man, like, I like just the work that he's putting in. For these rookies, what they're doing right now, this is the hardest thing they've ever done. And that's a real thing. But they'll make it, you know, but they have to put in the work, whether you grew up as a coach's kid or not. Like, it comes down to what we do out on the field, on the grass, like at practice. That's where it has to go down. And I'm encouraged, because what I've seen from him is this steady rise.
Good afternoon, Coach.
Got time for three more.
Yep. We talked extensively about you taking lessons from your first head coaching run to this one and not copy-pasting, making things better this time around. Having led a previously successful team through training camp this year, what are some of the lessons you pulled from that last experience to this one?
I really lean in, David, and you'll appreciate this from the military side, is the after actions. What did I like? What did we need to do differently? What needs to stay the same? And so that prepared me to go into, okay, from a coaching side, in these practices, we changed the length of our individual session to being longer. They wanted more time on more skill work. The team's in better shape now, so we practiced a little bit longer. We got more reps than we did last year in almost the same amount of time. So we're becoming more efficient, but because the guys are really fit and they're ready in the system, it's allowed us to practice more. So that's been a benefit. So I'd say, looking back before you begin the planning of what took place on the last training camp, what did I like? And I just finished this year's of things I liked. So as I'm, that'll go into the drawer and be ready for 26. But it does help to have an after action process to say, this went well, we need to do this more. And that's how I went about it.
Hey, Coach, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm trying to decide which one. So when you take a look at the preseason and you all's performance, run defense performance, what were your takeaways there, and how did that mirror to what you all, where you all landed on the roster?
Sure. I would say our tackling got better as we went, Candy. So first game, I didn't like it at all. Second game got better. As we got to Baltimore, I liked it better. As far as the run defense goes, if I just counted the preseason games, it'd be incomplete. So in totality, I like where we've added guys into the mix. Eddie, JK, Wise, like, these are some big, strong guys inside. So I'm pleased with the trajectory there. So it was a combination of adding some personnel, and then I would say, like, the technique feels better going into it. It'll always be something I see us working on, but our tackling, that's, to me, the top of the pile. And we're not where I think we need to be and will be. I feel that way every year at this time, because it's the thing we don't do full on. And so tackling feels like it gets better defensively kind of as the season grows, and you got to stay on the skill for that. But I'm much more pleased than I am a year ago sitting here at this time, that's for sure.
Hey, Coach. When you look through training camp and preseason, was there any wow moments for you that you did not expect to see?
Man, that's a good one. going into the season, the communication defensively reached a new level, and I was pleased to see that, Don. And like, that may not seem like a wow one for the coaches, I mean for the fans or for somebody watching practice, but the level of focus it takes to get that communication right, I know that the players and the coaches, man, they are putting in work. And so the walkthroughs, the consistency of that. The wow moment probably came for me. It was like before Baltimore, we had a practice that was designed only for situations. And I really pushed us to ones that come up a lot and some that don't come up very often. But their ability to execute on that day and what I would call winning time moments, that showed me, wow, like they've put in the work and they have an understanding of what we want to get done. Sideline catches, timeouts, long field goals, onside kicks. Those are the separators between winning and losing so many times. So I really wanted us to get tested and test the times, the thresholds. So that would have been my wow moment. I was expecting, let's hit that one again. Let's repeat that play. And I only did that probably twice in that whole practice, where I was expecting, I bet, five or six more times that it wasn't quite right, because you don't really get a second chance when there's 6 seconds left and you have no timeouts and you got to get the ball out of bounds. Like, either you do or you don't. And so that was a good sign for me that both sides of the ball on teams, like, they've been putting in that work in the winning time. So that would be my wow moment. We got a lot of work to do. Just, that's how I feel about practice, man. You just keep going for it, Donna, and eventually you keep getting better and better. But I like that we had a really good practice yesterday. It sometimes feels weird. Okay, who's here? Who's back? It's like this unusual spot. It's better than for some of the old heads in the room that when you covered the team, it went from like a lot to a little really fast. So with the extended practice squad, that helps. But I was pleased on the first day that we were able to really step into a rhythm together. All right, see you, everybody.
That was Commanders head coach Dan Quinn at media availability. So a lot of good stuff in there. He did mention a couple of absences. There are some guys that are having children, or their wives, I should say, are having children today. My wife will occasionally send me TikToks from Mikey Sanderstill's wife, and she was like very pregnant. So I believe they are having children today. So congratulations and best of luck to the wives, because they're the ones doing the hard work there. I do want to point one thing out. We're going to dive a little bit more into some of the things that Dan Quinn said. And there's also one other thing that Adam Peter said yesterday that I want to play that is massive. But I do want to point out the Commanders signed Donovan Edwards to their practice squad. I love Donovan Edwards. I think this is a fantastic move for Washington. What does it mean initially? Not much. Like, he's a practice squad player. Are we going to see Donovan Edwards in an actual jersey this year? Maybe not. I mean, I don't know how much we can expect a practice squad player to move up. However, what I'm excited about is that Donovan Edwards came from a championship pedigree at Michigan. He was supposed to be awesome in 2024, and he was not. He was just fine. He was on the cover of EA Sports College Football, which is kind of like a hilarious thing. It was Quinn Ewers, Travis Hunter, and Donovan Edwards. One of those guys won the Heisman. One of them was drafted in like the sixth or seventh round, that being Quinn Ewers. And the other one was not drafted and is now on Washington's practice squad. So not the best three guys to pick initially for the return of that video game. However, Donovan Edwards is explosive. That's why they signed him. They took him to the practice squad because the one thing that he did it well against Ohio State. He did it well in the championship game that Michigan ended up winning against Washington. He creates explosive plays. When he hits the hole and there's a gap there, he can take what is normally a 7-yard gain and potentially make it a 25 to a 30-yard gain. He has real speed. He ran a 4.4 in the combine or at his pro day. I think he used his pro day 40. He ran a 4.4 leading up to the draft, but he has 4.4 speed with the ball in his hands too. So I really like the addition of Donovan Edwards as much as I like most practice squad additions, probably a little bit more. But I think that is, I'm never going to be upset at the organization who is attempting to build a championship culture for signing guys that played in really big games in college with the hopes that maybe if you do come up to the roster, that things are going to be really, really well, and you'll be prepared for games that you're playing. It's one of the reasons why, you know, Booger McFarland talked about this earlier when he joined us. If you missed that conversation, you can rewind on YouTube, the Odyssey app, or it'll be available on podcast. Jane Daniels is a guy that played in really tough environments. Well, Donovan Edwards is that too. So he's just on the practice squad, but the addition of a guy at running back where you can never have too many running backs, explosive playmakers, I am a big, big fan of the addition of one Donovan Edwards. So a couple of other things that Dan Quinn mentioned, plus one comment Adam Peters made that should have everybody smiling ear to ear. It's Denton Day sitting in for Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980. Something Dan Quinn mentioned that I find to be really unique, maybe not as unique as I thought, but I just have never heard a coach say this before. It's a Kevin Sheehan show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. The first like 4 days of Washington's season is going to be a difficult one. You have the Sunday game against New York and then an immediate short week to take on Green Bay on Thursday. I don't like Thursday night games, week number two. I think you should at least wait until week three or four to play Thursday night games to allow everybody to get your feet underneath of you before you have these short weeks. But the NFL laughs in the face of safety, so I don't really care. Dan Quinn acknowledged that there are coaches on staff that are already preparing for Green Bay. To make the quick turnaround easier, they have guys that are already starting that process. So you play the game on Sunday. I would imagine you have the off day on Monday in terms of physicality, but you then begin the install, and then you work on that on Tuesday, off day, walk through Wednesday, game on Thursday. It's a tough slot. It's tough to squeeze a lot of things into, you know, what effectively ends up being a three-day span, because by the time you get to Thursday, it is the game. Like, you are not installing anything else. It's the game. You got to go out there and play. I've never heard a coach, though, come out there and say, yeah, we're already looking towards Green Bay, because almost every single time you're asking a coach about that, we're just focused on what's ahead of us. You know, we're not getting too far ahead of us. We're focused on New York. We're on to New York, whatever capacity, right? You very rarely hear a coach say, no, we actually have guys that are planning in advance. I love this, the way that they seem to operate. It's not like crazy, crazy new school, but it's not crazy, crazy old school. There's a fluidity with how Washington and Dan Quinn operates. And that has been really, really interesting to see. And I do wonder how much of that is based off of some things that maybe did not go as well in Atlanta. Remember when Dan Quinn got here and everyone panned the hire, new Ron Rivera, yada, yada, yada. But one of the things that he had said was that he did a full evaluation with anyone that ever worked for him. Hey, what did I do really well? What did I not do really well? And I have to imagine that this line of thinking came from that evaluation. Where Thursday night games, believe it or not, in a majority of Dan Quinn's time in Atlanta were not as prevalent as they are. Now a lot has changed in 8-10 years, whatever it has been since he was in Atlanta. But I have to imagine that there was something that he got from a coach, multiple coaches, that adjusted the way that he decides to run an organization. Because make no mistake about it, like, he is running this particular organization from a coaching staff. So I think that this comes from that. But it is very refreshing to get a coach that's like, we are adjusting, we are doing things differently. We are not afraid to get out at a podium and say, we have started trying to prepare for Green Bay. You can't really do a whole lot this far in advance because you haven't really seen them play. You know, once you actually watch the film on Green Bay, I think you'll see some things that, hey, we need to prepare for this that we maybe had not have thought of before, because they weren't doing this in the preseason, and this is something different than what they were doing last year, and some of the changes that they have made. So you have to adjust some things that you're already starting the preparation process for once they play a real football game that matters. But I just found that was the one answer that maybe stood out the most from Dan Quinn's availability today, is that they have already started that process for Green Bay. And I kind of love it. Like, I really, really like that they're not afraid to start doing and operating that way, Max.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like, the turnaround is so rapid.
It sucks. It's
for a Thursday night football game, like, we saw it last year, and they talked about it before the Eagles game. They didn't have time to fully implement everything that they wanted to in that offense for that week. So they were kind of, you know, behind. Jaden had a broken rib. So, I mean, you know, I'm coping with excuses, but at the same time, those are real. And those are very legitimate, like, things that happen during short weeks for Thursday Night Football. So getting ahead of that in whatever way you can, much like this, having guys work on it early, like, you're not taking away the full focus of the team, but you're also, you know, bringing it kind of into focus slowly but surely and kind of making it work fluidly.
Right. And I should say that they've spent a lot of the last 3 days trying to get ahead. I imagine that there's going to be a point where, if it's not today, maybe sometime next week. You know, they have a lot of off days. They're off tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for Labor Day holiday, just to allow the team to kind of get away, relax a little bit before the grind of the season actually begins. Next week, I would imagine it's all about New York, so they're not going to have guys, you know, planning for two at once.
Yeah.
I think that can be a little bit almost too blurry, and some of those things can bleed into one another, which you don't want. But the fact that they're already starting the process by saying, we've started the last 3 days developing something, and I would imagine the complexity of that game plan is not going to be at an all-time high. What are the things that we do really, really well? What are the things we are expecting them to do really, really well? Well, we're going to focus on stopping that, and we're just going to really prioritize the things that we do particularly well, and we are just going to hope and pray that Michael Parsons is not on that team by the time we get to that Thursday night game in week number two. I don't believe that Michael is going to get traded, but it was kind of funny to see that on social media, all because a fullback who I would assume was watching film of Micah Parsons. You know, the funny thing is with some of these trades is it's not like there is some inside information, but it's not like there's a ton. Like, what is a fullback going to know unless he's in these trade negotiation rooms? How is he going to know whether the team is actually going to trade for Micah Parsons? Like, what inside information is Kay Adams potentially going to have that a team is going to trade for Micah Parsons? Probably not a lot. I can't imagine someone in Green Bay's office, or God forbid Dallas's office is like, we should probably leak to Kay Adams that we might trade for Micah Parsons.
It's just the power she wields, bro.
It is the power she wields. She got grown men revealing a lot of secrets. I can't blame her.
You know who else has grown men revealing a lot of secrets, and we're going to find out what kind of secrets on September 11th, the Thursday night football game?
Taylor Rooks.
That's right.
She sat down with Jaden Daniels. Yeah, the best Jaden Daniels interview that I have seen from this offseason was by a local guy, friend of the program, had him on before. Evan Washburn was tremendous with Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been doing a lot more interviews. He did the SportsCenter thing when SportsCenter was here. He did Up and Adams with Kay Adams when Kay Adams was here. Evan Washburn got like nearly 12 minutes out of Jaden, which very rare. It was a fantastic, fantastic interview. So if you haven't watched that, I would encourage you to do so. This was at the very beginning of training camp, but it was fantastic. He was excellent with Evan, and Evan's just a great interviewer. All right, one more thing that I want to hear from Adam Peters. We'll do that when we get back. It is the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day, sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980.
All right, here is what's happening. Jeff Walker is trying to write me a message through the glass, but that's not important right now. What is important is that the Washington Commanders are bringing in former New York Jet and Michigan Wolverine running back Donovan Edwards and cornerback Darius Rush to the practice squad. The Nats, they fall to the Yankees last night by a score of 11-2. Cade Cavalli balloons his ERA from 2.82 to 5.11 after only 2 1/3 innings pitching. The Nats, they were unable to get the train back on the tracks with a horrendous 77-pitch third inning that enabled the Yankees to score 9 runs. The Nats are off tonight for the road trip home. They will take on the Tampa Bay Rays from Nats Park tomorrow night. Tonight, you got the Mystics taking on the New York Liberty right here on the Team 980. Tip-off at 7 p.m., so be sure to stay tuned following Doc Walker for Burgundy and Gold game, Burgundy and Gold Today. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us, and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. I have a few plays for tonight. College football week one starts. We got a ranked game at 5:30 p.m. What is it, Christmas? I mean, this is fantastic.
So excited, bro.
You get Boise State in South Florida. I do have a play in that one that I will share with you in a moment. We can't go through this entire show without sharing this one particular piece of audio. I was very intrigued with how Josh Harris was going to be involved, how much or how little in the Terry McLaurin negotiating. There was a point, I'm not afraid to admit this, there was a point after the Cincinnati game where there seemingly was no movement on the contract, and I was like, huh, does Josh Harris need to step in here? Like, I kind of want Terry. I'd like him to play for the team. Like, what's going on here? Here's Adam Peters on how Josh Harris was involved in this process.
You know, he's got a lot of experience of doing deals like these, not necessarily in the NFL, but in the NBA mostly. And so it's cool. We get to talk through it, and you know, the contracts here are so much different than in the NBA. So he's learning a lot as we go and understanding how these things work. So we keep him in the loop step by step about, you know, our conversations we have with agents and players and what we're going to offer them and what we get offered back and all those things. So he's learning. He's always trying to learn about things. He's really, really smart, but he's always still trying to learn more. And so keeping him in the loop on all that, but we had his full support the whole time, which was really cool. You know, even though he wants to know what's going on, he's backed us the whole way. And, you know, he leaves every decision up to us, which is really cool.
So this is what that's supposed to feel like.
Isn't it crazy?
A competent owner, not getting too much in the way, just wants to kind of know. I can't blame him. If you're going to sign a guy to a contract potentially worth $96 million, I would like to know just, you know, kind of how this money, how we reached the conclusion. So I don't mind that at all. But it is so nice that Josh Harris is not coming in there, putting his stick on the table and being like, you're going to do exactly what I say. I am the owner. I am in control. After 30 years of being trapped by that feeling, it feels amazing to be on the other side. And remember last year when they did the draft thing on Command Log, and people were losing their mind because why is Josh Harris in the war room? He's just hanging out with Adam Peters and with Dan Quinn. Why is he around? Is this Dan Snyder 2.0? He's just a curious fella. He's just a little curious dude, wants to understand how these sorts of things work. And it seems like that's exactly what his play was here. That's kind of why you saw the video of Terry hugging Josh Harris. Josh Harris is just kind of like, hey, y'all football people, do the football. I will be the one that signs the check, or my conglomerate of friends will be the ones that ultimately sign the check here. But I hired you to do the job. I'm going to let you do the job. It's a very nice feeling. Also, why would a boss hire somebody to do a job and then want to do that person's job for them? That to me has never made any sense in any capacity. Whether it's football, day-to-day life, why hire me to do a job and then not let me do the job because you want to do it? It doesn't make sense. Dan Snyder did that a ton. Josh Harris ain't doing that. So I liked that answer a lot from Adam Peters. Again, it was one of those things that kind of flew under the radar a little bit, but just kind of understanding that he's not this power-hungry giant in the room of like, you have to do exactly what I say, and that there seemingly was never a point where he was going to do that either, even if this got into the season, which it thankfully did not. I was pleased with that. All right, let's talk some college football. Should we talk some college football, Max?
Let's hit it.
Let's hit some college football. So we got a lot of games on tonight. I will be on SiriusXM for those that are interested, wrapping all of these games up after. I think I'm on at either 11 or 12 tonight. It depends on who is on our airwaves.
You better get that nap in, brother.
I need to get that nap. I got to wake up at 4 a.m. tomorrow, too. Whatever.
Oh.
All right, so the first game is Boise State and South Florida. This is a top 25 Boise State team. Boise State is now without Ashton Gentry, obviously. He's in the NFL. I love, Max, South Florida covering the 5.5 tonight.
Really?
You look at the way that the numbers are laid out. This is a very short number for a team in Boise State that is coming in off of the college football playoff, but with expectations, right? Here's the thing. Most people maybe not know this about South Florida. South Florida also has expectations to potentially get to the college football as the group of five representative. There's a number of schools that have legitimate chances to do so. Boise State is one of them. Locally, James Madison is one of them. Locally, Liberty is one of them. Not locally, South Florida is one of them. So this South Florida team does pose a legitimate threat to Boise State. The only difference is they don't have a number next to their name. So with this being a 5.5-point line on the road, I happen to lean, just generally speaking, in the direction of South Florida. And then I see where the money is being distributed. Mm-hmm. 75% of the spread bets, this according to BetMGM, are on Boise State. 75% on what I think is a little bit of a closer matchup. So 75% are going one way. I'm going to take South Florida to cover the 5.5 and just hope that that number does not adjust massively prior to kickoff, unless it goes down, and then I know that I'm on the right side there. So I'm taking South Florida tonight against Boise State. There are a couple of other games here that I at the very least find interesting and are debating whether or not I want to gamble on. East Carolina and NC State is one that I've been wrestling with for the entire day up to this point, Max. On one side, you have NC State that is a ACC team. They are in that conference. Not very good, but they're in that conference. On the other side, you get East Carolina, which is like this fun, spunky team, it feels like. There are years where they're like really good and really good for them, 8 wins, 9 wins, what have you. There's years where they're really good, and then there are years where they're just absolute hot garbage. But on top of that, this is a rivalry game. It doesn't feel like a rivalry game to us because we're not in Carolina, but this is a rivalry game, and a 14-point line in a rivalry game is a very, very large line, especially when you consider, I don't really like NC State that much. 50%. It's a 50-50 split on the spread. What am I supposed to do with that?
We're looking at different sites.
What site are you looking at? BetMGM has it 50-50. We don't have a sportsbook sponsor. I did ask our boss before then. I was what am I allowed to use here? And he said, we are not sponsored. We don't have an official sponsor, which is really a shame on them, but go ahead.
Sportsbettingdime.com currently has, it shows lines from all the sportsbooks, but right now I see ECU plus 14.5. That's the best line you're going to get with 75% of the bets on ECU and 73% of the money on ECU.
Damn, that's drastically different from what BetMGM is saying. Drastically different. So that's going to be something that I'm now staying away from.
Okay.
If it's that drastic, I'm not going to play that one. The other game that I'm looking at, and we might have to bring, if he is okay with it, I might need Big Ten Ant to get in front of a microphone.
Okay.
I don't know if he can. I don't think he can hear me right now. I need Big Ten Ant on a microphone to talk a little bit of Nebraska. Anthony McBarnett, who produces the Chris Russell Show, also produces on Sirius XM and does Big Ten Radio. So he is officially going to be known, at least for the next 4 minutes, to be the Big Ten insider here on the program. I love Nebraska this year, Max. I have a Nebraska 7-1. It's now 5-1, but I have them 7-1 to make the college football playoff. I think that schedule is particularly easy, and year number 3 for Matt Rule's a big jump. Big Ten Ant, do you like Nebraska to cover 6.5 against Cincinnati tonight?
Yeah, I think that's a great ability. Like, I think they have a great ability to do that, especially, like, all the word coming in, going into that game. It's in Kansas City. It's going to be a Nebraska home game.
Oh, my God. Those Nebraska fans are going to – there might be more Nebraska fans than Chiefs fans there when the Chiefs start playing.
We were talking about it earlier today, and they said that there may be 50,000 Nebraska fans at this Kansas City Chiefs game.
That's insane.
At Arrowhead. So, I think with that and then all the pressure going into it, Matt Rule has – you know, he's progressed over the years and turned that team around a bit. So I think they can easily cover that 6.5.
So 6.5 is where I might be leaning with Nebraska, just because I feel like they're a far better team than Cincinnati. Cincinnati's picked to finish pretty low in the Big 12, whereas Nebraska's at the very least middle of the pack, but I feel good about them finishing top of the pack in the Big 10. So the two official plays that I'm going to have today, Max, I'm taking South Florida against BYU to cover that 5.5, and I'm taking Nebraska to lay 6.5 tonight against Cincinnati. It'll be interesting, though. Are Swifties now Cincinnati fans? Because Travis went to Cincinnati. If I was Cincinnati, I would be leaning into that like crazy. Like, hey, our guy is now about to marry Taylor Swift. Like, you guys should all be Cincinnati fans. So I'm going to take Nebraska to cover the 6.5. As always, if these hit, thank me on Twitter. If they don't, tweet at Max.
Does this information that I'm about to drop on you that Big Ten Ant just dropped on me, is this going to change your bet at all?
I need to know the information first.
That's true. The Kelseys may be in attendance.
I think I knew that. I think Mahomes might be there too.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't
him
know
him and Rayola cheesing it up?
I don't know that. God, that relationship is so odd.
It's weird.
It's so odd. I don't know that T-Swift will be there, but I know that Travis is going to be there, and I had a pretty good inkling that Mahomes was going to be there as well. So those are the two picks. South Florida 5.5, Nebraska laying 6.5, and then we'll do this again tomorrow. By the way, we got Evan Washburn coming up on the show tomorrow. Just texted him. He said he's good to go. He'll join us, talk a little bit about his interview with Jane Daniels, Ben Standing as well. We'll add a couple more to the docket. But coming up next on the Team 980 is Chris Russell. See ya.